All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the deep dive. We love picking these kind of thorny legal issues to dig into, and today we're going to the Sunshine State, Florida, specifically. We're diving into kind of a classic constitutional power struggle. It's the governor versus the legislature.
Yeah, exactly. It's that age-old question. Who really controls the purse strings? Who gets to decide how the state's money is spent?
And for anyone, especially for anyone studying law, this is kind of fundamental stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's about checks and balances.
It really is, yeah. And the specific issue we're unpacking today is, can the governor's veto power, the power to say no to a bill, can that power extend to, beyond those bills that are specifically labeled as general appropriations bills? Can the governor veto spending even when it's kind of tucked into other legislation?
Right. So we're not just talking about, the big budget bills that everyone knows are about appropriations, spending. We're talking about, can the governor go line by line and veto spending in, an education bill or a healthcare bill, something like that?
Exactly. And the case that really brings this issue to a head, lays down the law on this in Florida, is Thompson v. Graham. And this wasn't just some minor case. This went all the way up to the Florida Supreme Court. It was a pretty big deal.
So this is kind of required reading for anyone who wants to understand how Florida's government really works, how those different branches interact, the legislature, the governor, the courts.
Absolutely. And in this deep dive, we're going to break down this case for you step by step. We'll start with the specific bill that triggered this whole fight. We'll look at the constitutional arguments, what specific language was at play. And of course, we'll dig into the reasoning of the Florida Supreme Court, how they arrived at their decision. And just as important, we'll look at those different opinions from the justices, the concurrences, the dissents. That's where you really get those rich nuances and the full picture of the legal debate. So think of this as your crash course in Thompson v. Graham and what it means for Florida's government.
All right, so let's set the stage. The year is 1985. The Florida legislature passes this bill, committee substitute for Senate Bill 848, or CSSB 848 for those who love their acronyms. And this bill is all about, funding for public education. We're talking capital outlay projects, school construction, renovations, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and this was not a small amount of money either. We're talking a substantial appropriation, $500 million. That was a lot of money back then. It still is, frankly. This bill was set to fund like over 80 specific projects across the state. Everything from building new schools to, upgrading existing facilities.
Okay, so we've got this huge education spending bill. What happens next? Enter the
Oh,
governor,
yeah,
right?
exactly. Now, the governor at the time, he didn't just veto the whole bill outright. Instead, he decided to use what we call a line item veto. He went through the bill and struck out specific projects that he didn't want to fund.
Interesting. So he's basically saying, okay, legislature, I like the general idea of funding education, but I'm not a fan of these particular products. I'm going to use my veto pen to take those out.
Exactly. And that's what really set off this legal challenge. The Florida House of Representatives, they were not happy with this move. They argued that the governor was overstepping his authority.
So their argument was, hey, the CSSB 848, this isn't actually a general appropriations bill, so you, Mr. Governor, you don't have the power to line item veto it.
Right. And they took this argument to court. But before they could even get the case heard, they had to clear a really important procedural hurdle. They had to establish standing.
Yes, standing. That's one of those legal concepts that can seem a bit confusing. It's not about, literally standing up in court.
Right. Standing is basically about showing that you have a legitimate reason to be bringing a case to court, that you've been directly harmed or affected by whatever you're suing about.
So in this case, the House of Representatives, how did they show that they had standing to sue the governor over this veto?
Well, the Speaker of the House at the time, a guy named Mr. Thompson, he joined the lawsuit not only in his official capacity as Speaker, but also as a taxpayer.
Okay, so he's wearing two hats in this lawsuit, representing the House and being an individual taxpayer. And why was that important?
Because it gave him that direct stake in the outcome of the case. As a taxpayer, he could argue that he was personally harmed by the governor's actions, that his tax dollars were being spent in a way he didn't agree with. Without that taxpayer standing, the court might have just tossed the case out saying, "Hey, House of Representatives, you don't actually have the right to be bringing this lawsuit."
That's fascinating. So it's a good reminder that even in these big constitutional questions, Those little procedural details can be absolutely critical.
Absolutely. All right, so we've got the bill, we've got the veto, we've got the lawsuit, and now we need to go to the rule book, right? We need to look at the Florida Constitution and see what it says about the governor's veto power.
Right. So the key provision here is Article 3, Section 8A, which says the governor may veto any specific appropriation in a general appropriations bill. Seems pretty straightforward, right?
Well, not so fast. As with so much in law, the devil is in the details. The real question here, the question that the Florida Supreme Court really had to grapple with, was what exactly constitutes a general appropriations bill? Is it just a matter of what the legislature decides to call the bill? Or is there some more substantive test, some way of looking at the bill's content and purpose to determine whether the governor's line item veto applies?
That's a great question, because you could imagine a world where the legislature could just, slap the label general appropriations on any bill they wanted, and then the governor would be powerless to veto any spending within it. That wouldn't really seem like a very effective check and balance, would it?
Not at all. And that's precisely the concern that the Florida Supreme Court had to address in Thompson v. Graham. You know, the whole point of checks and balances is to prevent any one branch of government from having too much power. So in this case, it's about striking that balance between the legislature's power to allocate funds and the governor's power to control that spending.
So, how did the court answer that question? What was their definition of a general appropriations bill for veto purposes?
Well, they came up with what they called the primary and specific aim test. Basically, they said a bill qualifies as a general appropriations bill if its main purpose, its primary and specific aim, is to appropriate funds. And this is true even if those funds are earmarked for very specific projects, like those education initiatives we talked about in CSSB 848.
Okay, so it's not just about the label on the bill, it's about the substance of the bill, what it's really trying to do.
Exactly. And what's really interesting here is how the court applied this test to the facts of Thompson v. Graham. They pointed to the sheer size of the appropriation in CSSB 848, that $500 million for education projects. They basically said, look, an amount that large can't be considered just an incidental or a secondary part of the bill. It was clearly the main event, the primary focus of the legislation.
Right. So their logic was, look, if the legislature is dedicating that much money to specific projects, it's pretty clear that their primary aim is to appropriate funds, even if those funds are going to be used for specific purposes.
Exactly. And the court also made it clear that they didn't see the governor's veto power as, negating the legislature's intent to fund these areas. They saw it more as just preventing that specific spending from going forward.
So it's not like the governor is saying, no, I don't want any money to go to education at all. It's more like he's saying, I support funding education, but I don't want to fund these particular projects.
Exactly. And the court actually used some really strong language in their opinion to emphasize this point. They said, and I'm quoting here, the bill's sheer scale makes it a general appropriation for capital outlay. That sentence really highlights how much weight they put on the amount of money involved.
It really shows you that they're not just looking at the title of the bill or some, technicality. They're really digging into the substance of it. What's the real impact of this legislation? What's it really trying to do?
Absolutely. And to illustrate this point even further, the court drew a contrast between this kind of bill, CSSB 848, and what they called a substantive bill.
What's a substantive bill in this context?
Well, imagine a bill that's primarily focused on, say, environmental regulations, right? Setting standards for clean air or water. But let's say that bill also includes a small appropriation, maybe a few million dollars, to help with the implementation of those regulations.
So the spending is kind of secondary to the main purpose of the bill, which is to regulate something.
Exactly. And the court said that in that kind of situation, the governor's line item veto power likely wouldn't apply to that smaller appropriation. Because again, the primary aim of the bill is something else entirely. It's not primarily about appropriating funds.
It's all about the main purpose of the legislation, the primary and specific aim, as the court put it.
Exactly. Okay, but as with any Supreme Court case, especially one that deals with these kind of fundamental constitutional questions, there wasn't complete agreement among the justices. We had some concurring opinions, some dissenting opinions, and these different viewpoints are really valuable because they give you a more complete understanding of the complexities of this issue. They show you that there's not always a simple black and white answer in law.
Right. It's not just about the majority opinion. It's about understanding why Some justices agreed with the outcome, but for different reasons, and why some justices disagreed entirely. So let's dig into these concurrences and dissents. Who wants to go first?
Well, let's start with Justice Boyd, who wrote a concurring opinion. He agreed with the majority's decision, but he wanted to make a specific point about what constitutes an appropriation. He argued that it doesn't actually matter where the money is coming from, whether it's from, you know, existing state funds or from bonds that had to be paid back later. The key factor is that it's an allocation of public money. It's a commitment to spend those funds, and therefore it falls under the governor's veto power.
Okay, so he's really honing in on that idea of what constitutes an appropriation in this context. It's not just about, you know, having the cash on hand. It's about committing to spend the money.
Exactly. Then we have Justice Shaw, who also wrote a concurring opinion. But his reasoning was a bit different. He actually argued that CSSB 848, the bill at the heart of this case, violated a different part of the Florida Constitution, what we call the single subject rule.
Okay, so what's the single subject rule all about?
It basically means that a bill should generally focus on one main topic. You know, you shouldn't have a bill that's about, you know, education funding and then also, you know, criminal justice reform all in the same bill. It helps to keep things organized and transparent.
So Justice Shaw is saying this bill is kind of all over the place. It's not really focused on one clear subject.
Exactly. But here's the interesting part. Even though he thought the bill violated the single subject rule, he still agreed with the majority that it qualified as a general appropriations bill for the purposes of the governor's veto power. It's a good example of how these legal cases can involve multiple constitutional principles all interacting with each other.
Right, right. It can get pretty complex pretty quickly. Okay, so we've got two concurring opinions, both agreeing with the outcome, but for slightly different reasons. Now, let's turn to the dissents. Who wants to take those?
Sure. So we've got two strong dissenting opinions, one from Justice Adkins and one from Justice Ehrlich. And both of them express some pretty serious concerns about the majority's ruling. Justice Adkins, he argued that the majority's interpretation of general appropriations bill was way too broad and went against the original intent of the 1968 revisions to the Florida Constitution. His view was that the framers of those revisions specifically wanted to narrow the governor's veto power, to limit it to those traditional general bills that cover things like state employee salaries and other recurring expenses, not to bills that fund specific projects.
So he's taking kind of a historical approach, looking at the context of those constitutional revisions, to argue that the governor's power shouldn't extend this far.
Exactly. And Justice Ehrlich echoed those concerns in his dissent. He was worried that the majority's primary and specific aim test was just too subjective, too open to interpretation. You know, one person's primary aim might be another person's secondary aim. He feared that this test could give governors way too much power to veto almost any spending bill they didn't like, regardless of its title or specific focus.
So he's seeing a potential for abuse, for the governor to really overreach with their veto power and upset that balance between the branches of government.
Exactly. He argued that this could lead to a real policy imbalance, where the governor has undue influence over the state budget and policy decisions. He saw this ruling as potentially giving the executive branch way too much power at the expense of the legislative branch.
Okay, so we've got this really fascinating split on the court, different justices looking at the same constitutional language and coming to different conclusions about its meaning and its implications. It's a great example of how law is not always clear-cut. There's often room for debate and interpretation. But beyond that kind of theoretical debate, what are the real-world consequences of this decision? You know, why should someone who's not a lawyer, someone who's not a judge, why should they care about Thompson v. Graham?
It's a great question. I think one of the biggest takeaways is that this case really shifted the balance of power in Florida's budget process. It gave the governor more leverage to shape how state money is spent, even for projects that are specifically authorized by the legislature.
So legislators in Florida, after Thompson v. Graham, they have to be very careful about how they draft any bill that involves significant spending.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not enough to just give the bill a title that doesn't sound like an appropriations bill.
Yeah.
Because if a court looks at that bill and determines that its primary purpose, its primary and specific aim is to spend money, then the governor's veto pen can come into play.
It's a powerful reminder that the substance of a law often matters more than its form, especially in these separation of powers cases.
Absolutely. And I think this case also raises some really important questions about the appropriate balance of power between the executive and legislative branches? You know, that's a question that goes way beyond just this one case. It's something that every state grapples with, every democracy grapples with.
Right. And it's a question that we see playing out in, you know, budget battles and political fights all the time. Who has the final say on how the money is spent?
Exactly. So as you follow Florida politics, as you follow, you know, budget debates, keep Thompson v. Graham in mind, because it really laid down some ground rules for how that power struggle between the governor and the legislature is going to play out, at least when it comes to spending.
Great point. And just to kind of wrap things up, to recap some of the key takeaways for our listeners, I think it's worth remembering that these debates over the governor's veto power, these aren't new. They have a history. They're rooted in changes to the state constitution over time. And as we saw in Justice Adkins' dissent, understanding that historical context can really help you understand how we arrived at the current interpretation of law.
Yeah, and don't forget about that interesting procedural detail with Speaker Thompson joining the lawsuit as both the speaker and as a taxpayer. That dual role was essential for the court to even hear the case.
Right, right. And finally, I think it's important to recognize that even though the primary and specific aim test gives us a framework for understanding the governor's veto power, there's still some inherent ambiguity there. Yeah. You know, what exactly does primary and specific mean in every case? That's something that future litigation might have to clarify.
Absolutely. So to sum it all up for you in a nice, concise takeaway, if you're in Florida and you're drafting a bill that involves spending a lot of money, you better be prepared for the possibility that the governor might try to veto parts of it, even if you don't call it a general appropriations bill. Because ultimately, the court's going to look at what the bill actually does, what its real purpose is, and that's what's going to determine whether the governor's veto power applies.
Great summary. And on that note, I'd like to leave our listeners with this thought. Think about that tension between the governor and the legislature, that push and pull over who controls the purse strings, who sets the priorities for state spending, and ask yourself, how might the legal precedent set in Thompson v. Graham continue to shape that dynamic in Florida's government in the years to come? It's a question that's worth pondering.
It really is. It gets to the heart of how power is allocated and exercised in a democracy.
Exactly. Well, thanks for diving deep with us today. We'll see you next time.
See you then.